we have for the bill and for the spreadsheets, but we also have them on the House Committee website.
They will be.
So you can look them up there. And today we're going to do primarily go through the spending spreadsheet. And if we have enough time, we'll also go through, I think, Article 1, which is conformity with the Affordable Care Law. And the two bills, I think, are almost identical. So what I thought we would do, we have some newer members here that haven't been. I looked around at the staff, and some of them have been here for quite a while. And so they're all familiar with each other, but some of the newer members may not know who they are. And I'll start at this end, and Jim Abler is not here right now. He's the former chair of this committee when the Republicans were in charge, and he's the Republican lead on the in the House committee, and he is from Anoka. So if you want to go around, Rena, and start with you, and we'll go through the staff, too.
Good morning. Rena Moran, St. Paul, District 65A.
And good morning. I'm Diane Loeffler. I represent District 60A in Minneapolis.
Representative Tina Liebling from Rochester.
Danielle Pinelli from House Research.
Lynn Aves, House Research.
Randy Chun, House Research.
Emily Cleveland, House Research.
Doug Berg, House Fiscal Staff.
Lucy Morgan, House CA for the HHS Finance Committee.
And Tom Huntley, I represent District 7A, which is in Duluth. It's called East Duluth, but if it was down here and if they paid attention to geography, it would really be Northeast.
Senator Tony Laurie, I represent District 11. It's most of the I-35 corridor between Duluth and the Twin Cities.
Stacey Weeks, I'm Committee Administrator for the Senate HHS Finance Committee.
I'm Dennis Albrecht. I'm the Senate Fiscal Analyst.
Katie Kavanaugh with Senate Counsel.
Joan White with Senate Counsel.
Dave LeBeco with Senate Counsel.
Melissa Franson, I represent District 49, which is Edina, West Bloomington, Eden Prairie, Minnetonka.
And I'm Melissa Wickland, and I represent District 50, and it's the rest of Bloomington and part of Richfield.
And then to fill out the Senate's roster, Senator Jeff Hayden from Minneapolis hasn't arrived yet, and Senator Kathy Sharon from down in St. Peter also has not arrived yet, but we expect them shortly.
Well, why don't we then start with the spreadsheet? I don't know. Also, Senate's going to start.
Mr. Chair, I think Mr. Albrecht will start, and we'll trade back and forth a little bit.
Could I
go ahead?
Could I make one announcement to the senators? We have we ran out of time, didn't get a chance to punch the revisers side by side. We have the councils side by sides punched and in your folders. But if you can kind of keep this packet in order, we'll hole punch it and get it assembled into the books later in the day, and you'll have your book complete. And that's how we walk through the materials. Actually, maybe you want to orient people on how we're going to walk through the materials other than the spreadsheet. The budget tracker is inside the binder. That's what we're going to be going through initially. And then given that we do have so many new members that haven't been on a conference committee,
yep.
Do you want to...
Well, there is a inside here, there is side-by-sides where they just summarize what's in each section of each article to give you a clear understanding, because we're not going to have time to read the entire bill, which is, what, 600 pages?
There's actually two side-by-sides. There's one that's a summary of the side-by-sides and the major differences as highlighted by Senate and House staff working together. I believe the Senate is on the right, left-hand side, and the House is on the right-hand side. And then in the middle column of the council summaries side by side is an indication of whether it's identical or what the major changes, the major differences between the House and the Senate are. And then there's a second side by side, which is the actual language. Again, the Senate on the left-hand side and the House on the right-hand side. And so if you have questions about the summary, you can actually refer to the other side-by-side that is the actual language that we'll be stepping through. So, I mean, if members want to orient themselves, there will be times when you don't have a whole lot else to do and you might look ahead and kind of see where some of the differences are, and that's how you are going to navigate these books, which is a task. Anyway.
Okay. Mr. Albright.
Mr. Chair and members, we're going to begin with the longer spreadsheet, the one that is 18 pages. Just to orient you, there are three sets of columns. The first columns are the governor's recommendation. The middle column is the House position, and the columns on the right are the Senate position. The first set of lines there, lines 6 through 14, show the total appropriations by fund. Lines 17 to 22 track the changes in the health care access fund balance for each set of columns. Lines 24 to 28 similarly track the TANF fund balance. And lines 31 to 36 total up all of the medical assistance changes by the categories indicated, families and children, elderly and disabled, and the rest. After that are the summarized appropriations for each of the departments in the committee's jurisdiction. Turning to the next page, there are a couple more agencies at the very top of that page. And on line 83, begin the change items for the Department of Human Services. The first one is on line 85. These are the a governor's recommendation, the Affordable Care Act compliance provisions. They deal with a variety of eligibility and enrollment changes. All three positions match a spending of about $138 million. You can see in the very left-hand column there are amounts there, $61,000 and $67,000. Those are the number of additional people who would be in the MA program by the end of those fiscal years. On line 96, these are the Affordable Care Act maintenance of effort provisions, also a governor's recommendation. All fund spending of about $28 million. And by the end of fiscal year 2017, about 13,000 additional people as a result of those provisions. On line 103 is the governor's recommendation to continue emergency medical assistance coverage for cancer and dialysis. That is a $3.1 million general fund item. On line 109 is a Senate position, one-time funding of $100,000 each year for emergency medical assistance eligibility assistance grants. On line 113 is a House position, return on taxpayer investment study, one-time funding of $100,000. On line 117 is a Senate position to provide medical assistance coverage for doula services beginning July 1st, 2014. The cost for that is $187,000 in the first biennium. On line 122 is a Senate position that would provide MA coverage for separate encounters on the same day. Normally, a person would have to come back in order to for their services to be covered when they might just have to go across the hallway to get the second service. That provision spends about $224,000 in the first biennium. On line 127 is a House position relating to Gillette Children's Hospital. It's a rate increase of $450,000 in the 14-15 year. Line 132 is a House and Senate provision relating to MA eligibility for inmates and medical institutions. It involves an interagency agreement with the Department of Corrections. The impact on the human services budget is neutral, and you can see in the detail lines that there is actually spending that is offset by an interagency agreement that would have the Department of Corrections paying for those MA costs. Going to the next page, on line 139 is the MERC PMAP provisions. The governor recommended $12.8 million. The House matches the governor's recommendation. Senate has half as much money and a different formula. On line 143 is the governor's recommendation for MA rate increases for specified categories. The House only has a dental rate increase, and that begins on July 1st, 2014. The Senate has the same provider groups as the governor, but delayed by a year, so they would be implemented on January 1st, 2015. On line 152 are critical access dental provisions. The Senate's provisions would add additional providers and includes a 5% rate increase for all of the providers, including the existing providers. And I will defer to Mr. Berg to talk about the next two House provisions, their critical access dental provision and the dental services expanded.
Mr. Chair, members, the House critical access dental provision is a little different. It does increase the providers to include sole practitioner providers. It also changes the existing law that a clinic that is part of a group of clinics, to receive the critical access dental rate, the individual clinic has to qualify, not one clinic, so that all of the group's clinics would qualify. This has an effect of saving money overall. The next item on line 161 is an expansion of dental services in MA to include sedation services and home visits for adults. This is to be used in cases for individuals with disability who need sedation services to have dental services performed on them.
Mr. Chair.
Representative Albright. Abler.
We're like twins, Mr. Chair.
thinking about something else.
I thought it was always was better, the better-looking one, so I'm feeling pretty good about that. Do you want questions as we go along, or how would you like that?
Sure. Ask questions. That's what we're trying to do, okay. So that everybody understands what each one of these items is,
and I don't know
particularly where there's differences.
Yeah, exactly. And so on this piece, the House reduced funding to one group by $3 million and then spread out some other money. Does the Senate do the same thing, Mr. Berg? There's no reductions to the health partners in the Senate at all? Just an increase in rates and keeps that? Okay, thank you.
Okay, is we going to Mr. Albright now? Or?
Mr. Chair, moving on to line 169. This is both a House and a Senate provision that adjusts the forecast assumptions for the managed care rates. The House position attributes savings of $20.9 million to that. The Senate position is a savings of $53.8 million. On line 180 is a Senate position. It's an HMO surcharge that raises about $80.4 million with no repayment.
Mr. Chair, members, on line 186 is a House-only provision, which is a changes the risk-based capital section of statute for HMOs to cap the amount they can have in reserve. Changes the risk-based capital amount back to the way the law was in 2004, and directs any additional reserves that the HMOs would have to be placed in a separate account under their control which would then be paid back to the groups that paid it in. And so there would be a $48.5 million reduction in state MA rates. There would also be some payments back to private insurers and self-insured groups for the amounts in excess of those levels that were attributable to their commercial business. On line 191 is an increase in the ICF DD surcharge, which has a payback in it. So the surcharge goes up, the rate goes up, and the providers are paid back.
Mr. Chair.
Hi. Representative Abler.
Just to step back a ways. That line 169, the managed care rates forecast to reflect recent experience, it seems the Senate had a different experience than the House had on that, and maybe we should just spend a second on that. That's a significant difference in the two bills. And I don't know what question to ask, but can somebody explain the Senate's experience? It says the title has the word experience in it, so is it an experience or is it an observation, or what would you call it, Mr. Chair?
Mr. Chair and Representative Abler, the Senate's position reflects the current contract rates that were negotiated as reflected in the governor's initial January budget proposal. And then allows the assumption of the amount of rate increase for the managed care plans to grow relative to the most recent contracts to increase only marginally. I believe the House position is to assume that they would increase a bit faster, or at least the rates would be a bit higher.
Thank you. Mr. Chair.
Representative Abler.
And to whomever, has that been scored by NMB or somebody to, or DHS agree that that's possible?
Mr. Chair and Representative Abler, the numbers came from the Department of Human Services.
I'll take that for what it is. Thank you.
Okay, let's continue you. On.
Mr. Chair, continuing on line 197, the House took on an amendment on the floor that reduces the existing nursing facility surcharge in the out biennium, and you can see that it has an effect of lost revenue for the state of $12 million in 2016 and almost $12 million in 2017. At the bottom of page 3 on line 203, the House has an increase in the statutory hospital surcharge, which in 2014 and 15 would raise a gross amount of $105 million. And then after the payback, it would have a gross amount of $202 million. And then after the payback, the state would net $105 million in the first biennium.
Excuse me. Do you have a run on the impact of that on hospitals?
On the Mr. payback? Chairman, Senator Sharon, no. The Hospital Association, I believe, has that.
We have a list someplace, Representative or Senator Sharon.
Without the amendment.
But without the amendment.
Mr. Chair, and just to that, I think the testimony of the hospitals is that the current version of the House is unrunnable. Mm-hmm. Because of the Medicare part, they're not sure if that's legitimate or not. So whatever the proposal the House is going to come forward with might need some work to craft that a bit more. So go back to the original language or something. So that came up on the floor as a brief debate, I believe, the discussion of that amendment. 3 hours and 3 minutes.
We did have runs on the original language. I think there were some issues with that as well, which is why an amendment.
Well, there's 18 hospitals that come out winners and about 80 that come out losers. But it's a way to capture federal money, and we are required to pay it. When we do the payback, it's based on what the MA rates are in those particular hospitals.
Mr. Chair and members, continuing on page 4 on line 211 is the governor's recommendation with respect to rebates for diabetic test strips. This essentially creates a preferred provider, resulting in savings of about $500,000. Line 216 is a governor's recommendation relating to the state maximum allowable cost. What this does is make the price for drugs the same in clinics as they would be in a pharmacy, resulting in savings of about $47,000. On line 222 is the governor's recommendation relating to child and teen checkup rates. It recalculates MA rates to account for free vaccines for kids available through the Department of Health. The providers get those vaccines for free, and this provision incorporates that fact into the rates, resulting in savings of about $940,000. On line 228 is the governor's recommendation relating to 340B drug reimbursement. The House also has that position slightly modified, and the Senate does not have that position. I'm going to skip over governor's recommendations that neither body has. These are largely things that are in the contingent article.
Senator Lurie.
Is there a quick explanation of what the difference in the 340B is? I mean, I've seen this on the sheet. And
Mr. Chair, Senator Lurie, the House has an MA rate increase. You can see on line 232 for some providers who are adversely affected by the 340B reduction.
Okay. Thank you.
Mr. Chair and members, we will get to most of the Reform 2020 initiatives in the second spreadsheet, which is tracking the contingent items. However, the Senate did take some of the governor's Reform 2020 initiatives that didn't actually require federal approval, and the Senate has them in the primary, the non-contingent part of the bill. And the first one of those is on line 252. This is a provision that allows people on a ventilator to not have to go to a nursing home for 30 days before they get a higher budget. Moving on to the next page, on line 283 is another Reform 2020 relating to the individual community living support being added to the alternative care and elderly waiver. Again, this is a provision that does not require federal approval. It provides services and options that allow seniors to stay in their own home longer, avoiding more expensive care and service options. The Senate accepts the governor's recommendation but does not include the FTEs. On line 293, is also a governor's recommendation for Reform 2020 relating to crisis diversion and discharge planning. This creates specialists in 5 regions in the state to work with people who are on CADI waivers who are hospitalized because of a mental or behavioral health crisis, and works with them to get necessary services to manage their condition and avoid future hospitalizations. Moving down to line 333 is the governor's recommendation to modernize the Department of Human Services technology programs. The House position is the portion of that proposal that relates to the health insurance exchange bill that was passed earlier in session. This is the amount, the $4.3 million that was always carried in the fiscal note for that bill as being the MA portion of the exchange expenses. The Senate position has that. In addition, the Senate also has $3 million. You can see that on line 336 for the governor's.
Senator Lori.
I'm sorry to keep interrupting, but as people go through this as well, we skipped over many of the Reform 2020 pieces, and just for clarity, that's because we carried the lion's share of those in a separate article in the bill, the contingent article that's on a separate spreadsheet. The Senate did, as Mr. Albrecht explained as we went through some of them, picked up some of the governor's recommendations within the Reform 2020 package that did not need federal approval and were either cost neutral or a savings and were good policy measures. And so when we skipped over those Reform 2020 pieces, including the investments in DHS modernization of technology systems, the balance of those investments are carried in the contingent tracking sheet so that if the Reform 2020 package is approved, these investments will be made, but they're carried in the separate article that will be covered later. But I think that often confuses people who haven't been intimately tracking what we're doing. So just that clarity as we move forward.
Mr. Chair.
Representative Abler.
To that point, the items on 283 and 293 that are carried in the Senate tracking and not in the House, are those similar things that for some reason the House just didn't say that specifically? Or do we not do those things?
Senator Berg.
Doug Berg. Mr. Chair, Representative Abler. It isn't that we didn't do them at all. It's that as Senator Lori was saying, in the case of the House, the House pulled all of the 2020 initiatives out into the supplemental article, whereas the Senate did almost all of it, but there are a couple of things that they left in the main article.
All right. Thank you.
Mr. Chair and members, continuing on at the bottom of page 5, on line 339, this is the governor's recommendation relating to services for children with autism spectrum disorder. And the House has the governor's recommendation, and the Senate does not.
Mr. Chair.
Just a minute, Senator Franzen. The House dollar amount is the same as the governor's, but there's been some changes within that related to treatment of autism. So, Senator Franzen.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Mr. Albrecht, you failed to hear where that $3 million, that extra in the Senate proposal, can you remind me where that's going as relation to part of it's going to be for the MA portion, but what's the rest? I can't seem to recall.
Mr. Albrecht.
Mr. Chair and Senator Franzen, if you look on line 336, this is a governor's recommendation of about $7.8 million for systems modernization. It is a scalable proposal so that whatever funding the legislature would provide for that, the department would basically adapt their plans and use whatever funding is available in order to begin systems modernization.
Mr. Chair.
Representative Abler.
Let me go back to autism for a second. I just wanted to offer a comment about that. I don't know if you finished with that, and we jump back to the technology thing. There's three groups that have concerns about the elimination of MCHA as a result of the ACA and all that. That's autism parents, dialysis, and the AIDS community. And in the bill, we, at this very table, I think I was in about this chair, maybe I was there, we changed the word to an appropriate termination of MCHA as opposed to an eventual termination of MCHA. And there may be a tail in that that makes sense to continue to serve the autism families as well as the other two groups if they need it. But I just want to know I'm trying to find a way to make that work. And I hope the Senate's interested in looking at what the governor had to do because there's some real challenges there. But in terms of the private side, there might be somewhere to go as we shut down MCHA and keep that tail and make a reinsurance pool or something for that group. So just to tell you what I'm trying to think about and maybe involving some TEFRA level of payments on behalf of the families so it's scalable and a little less expensive for the state. So thank you.
Thank you.
Okay.
Mr. Chair and members, we're on now the top of page 6. On line 347 is the governor's recommendation that would create additional waiver slots for certain populations. The Senate does not carry that provision. The House carries it, it looks like, delayed by 2 years. On line 361 is the governor's recommendation that it's not carried by either the House or the Senate with respect to nursing facility rate increases with the quality add-on. On line 366 is the Senate's position. Just to step back to the governor's position, that is a $19.6 million proposal. The Senate's proposal on line 366 would do rebasing for nursing facilities, a total of about $20.2 million. And the House position addressing the same topic is on line 370. It's a nursing facility rate increase 3% beginning July 1st, 2013, and the total for that is $21.4 million. On line 374 is a governor's recommendation that's carried in both the House and the Senate that would suspend the AP, the alternative payment system. It's basically an inflation adjustment for nursing facilities. Similarly, on line 378 is a property rate inflation adjustment that is a governor's recommendation that is also carried by the House and the Senate. On line 382 is a governor's recommendation for the waiver provider pay for performance initiative. This is not included in either in the House and the Senate. Both bodies address rate increases for that group of providers on line 390. The Senate's position is a 1% increase beginning January 1st, 2015, and an additional 1% on July 1st, 2015. The House position is 2% beginning July 1st, 2013. You can see the relative dollar amounts there. The House position is $65 million in the 14-15 biennium. The Senate's position is $7.3 million. The governor's was $6.6 million. On line 400 is a Senate position that would repeal a provision enacted in 2011 that requires permanently disabled people to be assessed and reassessed periodically.
Mr. Chair.
Representative Ayler.
Maybe Senator Lurie could just answer a question on this line 400 assessment reassessment thing. Mm-hmm. Was that just an economic choice, or did you have some issue with that?
Well,
Senator Lurie.
Mr. Chair, Representative Abler, certainly an economic choice. And, you know, I mean, when you look at the fiscal note on it, it said pretty clearly that we weren't going to find people that were determined permanently disabled that aren't disabled any longer. And so given that and the cost savings associated with us, it seemed like a good idea to capture those cost savings and not go ahead with this assessment and reassessment and reassessment of people who have been determined permanently disabled. It seemed like undue burden on both the state and the individuals that would be put through that additional assessment process.
Well, Mr. Chair,
Representative Abel,
perhaps I can help you understand what the intent was. What? It's for CADI, TBI, and CAC waiver individuals, for individuals who are likely to improve. And part of our disability reforms from last time was to try to put people in more independent living settings as quickly as they can be found to move there. Historically, people have been warehoused, frankly, in facilities like Anoka and Brainerd, and we've moved them into 16s and 4s. But now the new warehouse is a 4. And so the thinking is to get them people who are able to live in supported apartments with a roommate or whatever. The system needs some pressure to do that. And the last year's provision, I don't know why it costs money, because it should save money. And there are people that are not being found. And the assessment system is flawed across the state in terms of moving people and getting them to be incented to go. But so if you're likely to not improve at all, there's no change in how often you're going to be reassessed. But if you're likely to be improving, then by having a more frequent assessment, you would actually be, you know, encouraged to move into a more appropriate setting. That's the idea of it. And so if there's some snags, then I'm happy to work on it. But there's another provision in the bill where we encourage individuals who are deemed to be not needing corporate foster care levels of care anymore to move into a new setting. I was surprised you had to write that down. But there's a great gravity in the four units to keep people there because it's frankly an economic stream to the owner of the four unit. And it's comfortable for the county and for people. And many of these individuals want to be alone in their own apartment and live in a site up to 25% of an apartment house with individuals like that so they can actually meet their neighbors. And so that's the idea. So I'll work with it. I just wanted to make sure where I think it's a good piece. And for all the money we spend, that might be one of the better ones to hang on to. So.
I figured you might think it was a good idea.
Thank you, Senator.
Okay, we'll continue on with the staff.
Mr. Chair, on the bottom of page 6, line 406, is a house-only provision on congregate care living rates modifications. In the 2011 bill, there was a reduction in congregate care rates based on an assessment of low-needs individuals. There's been a fair amount of testimony we've received that the assessment does not do a good job with mental health cases, and the House's initiative would modify the rate reduction for congregate care situations where they received a mental health certification. Mr. Chair, moving on to page 7, on line 413, is a governor's item on waiver management improvements that neither side took.
Mr. Chair, The Senate actually does include the policy proposal of the governor's. We just don't pay for the FTEs. That's true for the items on line 418 as well as 425. Okay.
Mr. Chair, those two items on 418, the quality initiative is a training initiative related to practice positive practice and behavior around the use of restraints and isolation, which is an outgrowth of the Meadow settlement. Again, the House has got the item in there. The Senate, I believe, just does not cover the FTEs involved. On line 425, there's also an initiative for training of providers on the new 245D standards when they go into effect. Similarly, the House has got that item in. The Senate, I believe, has the language, but not the FTEs. Mr. Chair, moving on to line 435, there's a governor's item to enhance audit activities for nursing facilities that all sides have got. And I'll let Mr.
Chair and members, on line 440 is a Senate position. This is a proposal that would have one ICFDD facility close 3 beds, transfer one of them to another ICFDD facility, and then for the facility that closed the beds, there is a rate adjustment for their remaining beds. The item on line 444 is a Senate position that does not have a cost, although it does allocate money that has been previously appropriated for moratorium exception projects. This item and the item on line 448 address the same issue, which is that these facilities were provided guidance from the Department of Human Services that turned out to be incorrect, and the department worked with members to come up with a way to reallocate some of the existing authority for moratorium exception projects to cover these two projects. There is still money left in the current authorization even after all of the projects have been awarded in the most recent
round of proposals. On line 452 is a governor's proposal to restore.
Representative Liebling.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And Mr. Albrecht, is it? I'm interested in that, and I'd like to, if we can, I actually asked Mr. Berg about this as well. I'd like to know how much is in that fund, because we, you know, if I'm understanding right, there was some money set aside that wasn't used. So there's some money somewhere that could be allocated either here, where it comes out as a zero on the spreadsheet, or if the conference committee chose to do something else with it, at least I'd like to know how much it is and, you know, whether it is, in fact, available for other things. So if we could get that information, or maybe you have it now, how much it is that you just talked about.
Mr. Chair, Representative Liebling, I can certainly find out. However, trying to take that money and use it for different purposes would be inconsistent with the budget rules, and basically we would have to pay for it if we wanted to do that.
And
Senator Lurie.
Mr. Chair and Representative Liebling, DHS came and testified on both of these, and these were mistakes that were made as facilities were doing some repairs and upgrades, and there's an ability for them to get an enhanced rate for these moratorium exceptions, and they had been informed that they would be eligible for them, and then when they went ahead and did the upgrades and spent the money, and then were later told that for some host of reasons they weren't eligible, and so it was a mistake that DHS admitted that they had made, but they've updated their system so that the same mistake is not made again, and they had sufficient money in this area for the moratorium exception process to cover these two facilities without an additional allocation. And it just seemed right to allow them to move forward and honor what they had indicated to these two facilities about their ability to gain the slight bump on rates for the moratorium exception that they'd been told that they could get for the upgrades that they were doing.
Representative Liebling.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And Senator Lurie, I'm not opposed to those, and we heard about them too. If there's a pool of money someplace, I just want to make sure that we know what the pool is. That's all.
Yeah, we'd have to.
So that we're just making a conscious decision about how we're spending money that is there. That's all the reason I'm asking.
Yeah, we actually had the McLeod County one in our language, but it did not show up on our spreadsheet because there's no cost.
Oh, it says House No on that one.
Yeah.
Mr. Chair?
But House, yes. So,
yeah. Representative Abler.
Well, and Representative Liebling, to your thing about the money, it's actually like a puddle of money. I think we put $500,000 in either 11 or 12, I don't remember which, and it multiplies by some ridiculous number where they fix roofs and buy furnaces. And so there's a lineup that's pretty long to do those projects in our aging nursing home stock. So if you had an amendment to move it to something else, you might get some visitors in your office.
Mr. Chair, just to further explain on this, it's a little bit different. It seems to members like it is a pool of money because we approved, I believe it was $1 million last year, maybe it was $800,000. But the way this works is it was an approval of an increase in MA in that year for a total number of projects that would add that much to MA billing. As it moves forward, it basically is just baked into the forecast at that point. It isn't an actual account with dollars in it. It's simply an increase in the MA forecast that happened last year and was paid for that we assume rolls forward until enough projects that have increased the rate up to the amount we covered in a year have been used up. So yeah, as Mr. Albrecht says, the issue would be you'd have to go back and amend the bill, and then you'd be taking forecast savings, which is ordinarily not allowed to do. My point is that it is not an account with money sitting in it. It's an idea of forecast increases that we made.
Okay, thank you.
Mr. Albrecht.
Mr. Chair and members, I believe we are on line 459. This is a governor's recommendation. It is largely a technical issue with respect to the HIV rebate account and shifting money and also correcting past appropriations errors. On line 483 is a House and Senate provision that modifies a residency ratio restriction for certain disabled populations. On line 467 is a Senate position that repeals a 2012 TEFRA fee increase that costs about $1.1 million.
Mr. Chair.
Representative Abler.
Can I just talk about that? The header is wrong on that. The increase actually came, I don't remember which year it was, either in 07 or 09. In 11, we just carried it forward, or 12, whichever. So if that could be just adjusted, I don't care if you list it, it's the 07 or 09 fee increase, but it should just say repeal. The 212 should be deleted because that was not a new fee at the time. It was a continuation of exactly the same formula and exactly the same money.
Mr. Chair and Representative Abler, perhaps we could add the word extension.
We can barter this, but I just, but it didn't start with us. It happened under a different group with a different governor. And actually, I was part of the team at the time that tried to soften the blow of the impact of it. We pushed it up or something. So, whichever, but I just don't think it's fair to call it the increase in 2012. Thank you.
Okay, continue, please.
Mr. Chair and members, on line 471 is a House and Senate position that I assume is the same, although we track the money a little bit differently. It's $360,000. It appears to be one-time spending in both bodies. It's for fetal alcohol syndrome grants.
Mr. Chair, at the bottom of that page on line 475, the House has an item that spends $230,000 a year one time on a mental health pilot project. Moving on to page 8 on line 479. The House, in 2011, the Human Services Bill reduced the grants for community services development grants and community services grants. Those were scheduled in the budget, the base budget for 2014 and 15 to return to their prior level, their pre-2012 level. The House just continues them at the same level they're at in fiscal 13, which results in a savings of $7.2 million.
2013.
Mr. Chair, on line 483 is a Senate position that includes an appropriation from the lottery fund for problem gambling treatment services. On line 493 is a House and Senate position relating to child care absent days. The difference between the two bodies is that the Senate does not include the medical exemption that was part of the bill, saving about $500,000, it looks like. On line 499 is a Senate proposal that would allow child care assistance for disabled caretakers with serious mental illness. Price for that is $2.4 million. On line 505 is a similar Senate position that allows child care assistance for a disabled adoptive caretaker with an employed spouse or second household member. $187,000. On line 510 is a Senate position. It's a child care provider rate increase. It's 2% beginning July 1st, 2013. On line 523 is a
just to get my attention.
Senate position that increases adoption and relative custody care rates by 2%. On July 1st, 2013, also some policy provisions that are related to that proposal.
Mr. Chair, on line 528 is a House position that reallocates $20 million a year of the support services grants line in of TANF money, and there's a rider in the appropriations section that essentially creates a new housing support grant item with that same money. The net effect is neutral on the TANF line, but it does segregate $20 million from current purposes for the new housing grants item.
Yeah.
Mr. Chair, moving on to line 533, both the House and Senate repeal the MFIP family cap, but they do so in different ways. The House uses TANF funds from the support services grant line again to eliminate the TANF family cap. The Senate, I believe, uses general fund money and eliminates the cap in the second year of the biennium.
And, Mr. Chair, the Senate's position in the out years of the next biennium moves the funding to pay for that into the TANF fund. On line 542 is a Senate position that would increase the MFIP transitional standard beginning October 1st, 2015. The total spending from the TANF fund from that is about $50 million with small offsetting savings in other funds. On to the next page, on the top of page 9 on line 550 is the governor's proposal relating to the MFIP program. The House does not have that proposal. The Senate includes portions of it but does not pay for the FTEs or administrative funding that was requested to implement those provisions. On line 569 is the governor's proposal to expand the parent support outreach program. The Senate includes that provision. On line 573 is the governor's proposal to eliminate the EBT transaction fee. Saves about $400,000. The House includes that. The Senate does not.
Mr. Chair.
Representative Abler.
Well, I just had a visit from some of the rural grocers about that, and this is not without impact on some of those. I think that the bigger companies also get reduced, but maybe there's some way we can – I see the Senate doesn't have it at all. Maybe that was their concern, not to give you motives. But I even 4 cents apparently on these transactions is a big deal for these little rural grocers. So maybe there's a way to get most of benefit and make sure we keep the – impact on the ones that can more accommodate it.
So Representative, or Senator Lori.
Abler, are you advocating the Senate's position?
Mr. Chair, Representative Lori, I think the Senate's position is always improved by looking at what the House has done.
Mr. Chair and members, continuing on line 577 is the governor's recommendation to adjust the adoption assistance funding to reflect the current caseload. It saves about $1.8 million and is included in both the Senate and the House positions. On line 581 is a Senate and House provision that would repeal a 2012 rate change for a specific GRH provider that has not yet been implemented. Line 586 is a governor's recommendation. This is a largely technical provision that uses existing state expenditures to maximize federal revenue.
Mr. Chair, on line 590 is the governor's item on expansion of the school-linked mental health grants. The House carries that provision. The Senate does not. Moving
Mr.
on
Chair.
To line 596.
Representative Abler.
Well, just to help understand the Senate's position there, was you just didn't have enough money, but you liked the idea, or did you not like the idea of the school-length grants?
Senator Lori.
Mr. Chair, Representative Abler, SchoolLink grants got a lot of really positive testimony, a lot of good feedback from our members. We had a really difficult budget target.
Yeah.
Couldn't get it included.
Mr. Chair, moving on to line 596 is the governor's item to establish a clinical care coordination benefit in medical assistance. Both the House and the Senate pick up that item, which saves about $700,000 in the first biennium. On line 602 is the governor's item to establish a family psychoeducation benefit in medical assistance. This item has language, but it doesn't end up having a cost on the spreadsheet. The House and Senate both have the language in. Moving on to line 606 is funding for food shelf programs. The governor did not have funding. The House has $50,000, and the Senate has $1 million in the first biennium, and the Senate's item is ongoing funding. At the bottom of the page on line 610 is the Network for Better Futures. This is a nonprofit project that works with former prisoners. The House has $200,000 one time for that.
Mr. Chair, at the top of page 10 is a Senate position that includes one-time funding for advocating change together. On line 618 is the governor's proposal to expand mental health crisis response services. Both the House and Senate include that proposal. The Senate's position in 1415 is $500,000 less because the Senate decided to match the governor's recommended ongoing level in the current in the earlier biennium, I should say. On line 622 is the governor's recommendation to adjust the ARMS payment rate and services. The governor's proposal is largely intended to maintain the viability of providing those services. On line 628 is a governor's position related to mental health specialty treatment services. This provision is for individuals who don't need to be at the Anoka RTC because they've been stabilized. It creates a new specialty service, a 24-hour medically staffed outpatient service that is an intermediate step between hospital level of care and return to the community. On line 633 is a governor's proposal to provide one-time funding for training on the substance abuse screening, brief intervention, and referral to treatment tool. The House does not include that provision, and the Senate does. It's $600,000 one-time funding. On line 637 is a governor's recommendation to eliminate regional treatment center transition grants. The House and the Senate both pick up that provision. It saves about $5.3 million. Line 641, I believe, is a Senate-only provision that provides MA coverage for psychiatric consults by psychologists and APRNs. On line 645 is a Senate position that provides MA coverage for mental health certified family peer specialists. Costs about $275,000. On line 655 is the governor's proposal to transfer money from the Chemical Dependency Treatment Fund. It's a one-time activity, about $18 million that is carried in both the House and the Senate positions.
Big deal.
On line 661 is a governor's proposal relating to one-time or time-limited mental health transition services. This provision is carried in both the House and the Senate. It is for people who are ready to move from the Anoka facility and the Minnesota Security Hospital. It provides a flexible source of funding to provide services and supports necessary to help people transition to the community from state institutions.
Mr. Chair, on line 670 is the governor's item to increase the county share of the cost of placements at Anoka Regional Treatment Center. The House has that provision. The Senate did not. On line 674 is the governor's item, which also raises the county share of placements at the Minnesota Security Hospital, which the House picked up and the Senate did not. Mr. Chair, on the top of page 11 is the on line 6878 is the projected increase in program growth at the Minnesota Sex Offender Program. The governor and the House and the Senate are identical on that item. On line 683 is the item of implementing a new fee schedule for home and community-based services providers. This is the new 245D licensure. I should note the House's numbers match the governor's. There was an amendment that the House took on that changed the license fees to some degree, but I think the language does not work quite right, and there was discussion between the department and the providers that they would continue to work on that, and the department did not update our numbers. We just left them since these are state government special revenue fund numbers. I'm not sure. The Senate is carrying slightly different numbers, and I'm not sure if those are based on an updated schedule.
Mr. Chair and members, the Senate's position is simply half the fees of the governor's recommendation. Continuing on line 688 is the governor's recommendation to implement an ACA provision that requires provider screening for certain providers. It costs about $600,000. I believe both the House and the Senate have adaptations of the governor's recommendation for child care licensing changes, but both the House and the Senate have removed the provisions that would create costs for that. On line 705 is the governor's recommendation to provide money for child care provider investigations and data analytics. This is a provision that would eventually lead to savings from recoveries for overpayments or improper payments to child care providers.
Mr. Chair, on line 715 is the governor's item, which expands the department's audit capacity. The House picked up this item. The Senate did not. Moving on to line 720, the governor had an item to expand the surveillance and integrity to review. This is basically trying to prevent MA fraud, and both the House and Senate have picked up this item, although the Senate has changed the numbers some.
Mr. Chair, the Senate's position represents four FTEs.
Mr. Chair, moving on to line 726, this is MA provider recoveries that are assumed to happen from enhanced audit and integrity review activities. And again, all three have this item, but the Senate has picked up a different number here.
Again, Mr. Chair, the Senate includes the policy proposal, but not the FTEs. Line 733 is a Senate-only provision with respect to guardians and conservators' background studies.
Mr. Chair.
Senator Lurie.
On that one, I do understand that the House has this provision, has been moving it, and has been hearing it. We kept it in this bill because it actually has FTEs in the Department of Human Services, and the money needs to be allocated, appropriated at some point, and ours seemed like the right budget to do it. So, I mean, we'll have to track where it is in the House and figure out if this is the right
place, but that's...
Yeah.
Mr. Chair, I believe that is traveling in the House Judiciary Finance Bill.
When, Mr. Chair, when we heard it, and it got some work after that, but there were 13 FTEs in the Department of Human Services when we heard it in our division, and we said, you know, we're going to keep it in our division with that many FTEs at DHS.
Mr. Chair and members, on lines 739 and 744 are governor's proposals related to background studies. Both the House and the Senate include those proposals. Line 755 on page 12, the House has technical provision relating to a statutory transfer between the Health Care Access Fund and the General Fund. That's on line 755. On line 761 is the governor's proposal to strengthen the newborn screening program. This particular line is the DHS side, the MA side of a proposal that is carried in the Department of Health. Line 785 is another increase to the newborn screening fee. This is an increase that generates money and then uses that money to pay for deaf and hard of hearing support services. On line 772 is the Minnesota Care reform provisions. There are policy differences between the Senate and the House and the governor. And the House and the governor also move some populations, the spending for some populations around between the Health Care Access Fund and the General Fund. The Senate's provision, or the Senate's position, I should say, the difference of about $30 million is attributable primarily to reduced premiums and the elimination of cost-sharing requirements. There's also an additional benefit for non-emergency transportation.
Mr. Chair.
Representative Abler.
To this, not for now, but for as we go forward with this, we should. It would be, I think, in our interest to dissect the choices that have been made in this Minnesota Care expansion and all the ACA compliance stuff that it's in the bill. It does, even though we have a negative spending target, these topics suck up a great deal of money and take away a lot of our flexibility to do other things we want to do, schooling, mental health grants and disability services, et cetera. And I think it'd be productive to create a spreadsheet that shows choices we've made. There was one of those. We went to the class, the work groups on the basic health plan. And if you buy premiums that are lower, that's expensive, and some people drop out. And so we know what choices we're making as a conference, not to assume that either bill, the two versions are similar, but that's not to assume that's the way we should go, because at least I know what choices we're making. And I don't know how we conjure that up, but maybe the two fiscal people could give us a spreadsheet and by choosing premiums to spend some more money or save some money by the benefit set that we've chosen to have in this plan, where we have choices, we've chosen to spend some money or not. I think that would help us at the end as we try to get a bill that's balanced, because I think the bill is pretty heavy on the healthcare side and pretty light on the disability services side. And if that's what people want to do, then you'll know you're doing it on purpose. Does that make sense? That was meant to be kind. I wasn't trying to rip on anybody, but I just want to make sure you know what we're buying.
If the staff could prepare a little sheet on the Health Care Access Fund, I know Senator or Doug Berg has already done that for me. But
Mr. Chair and Representative Abler, we actually do have a very nice chart that provides the information that you're looking for, so we'll be sure and provide that to all the members.
And Mr. Chair, especially as it regards choices that we have, and so then we could choose, and we'll vote, or you'll decide, and we'll agree or not. Thank you.
And
Senator Lurie.
Mr. Chair, and to Representative Abler's point, I mean, I think it is important that we think about the choices that we're making, but also think about this population that we've had a 20-year commitment to serving well, and through utilization of the Health Care Access Fund. This is the very population that the Health Care Access Fund was designed to provide the supports for. And, you know, Minnesota is the only state that went out and was able to get the feds to actually move the ball and talk about implementing the basic health plan to allow us to continue Minnesota Care. And it becomes incumbent upon us to make sure that we're moving Minnesota Care forward, I think. And so, I mean, I think that making sure that we have the choices that we're presenting in front of us is a good thing to do. But having a Minnesota Care that can actually work for these low and moderate, hardworking Minnesota families is a really important principle. And it is the reason why we created the Health Care Access Fund in the first place. And so we can't lose sight of that either in the conversation.
I have a question for staff. It's my understanding this is would most likely be a year and a half program. Is that included in? I mean, if the feds come and give us the basic health plan, are we forecasting that or not?
Mr. Chair, my understanding is that the DHS projection of funding assumes the funding that they have requested. Let me see how to phrase this. It assumes that the federal government will go along with the waiver request that we are putting forward. And so that money is factored in here. As the program changes, they assume that CMS will agree to our view of how much participation the federal government will have. Maybe Mr. Albrecht can put that in a bit more clearly than I did.
Mr. Chair, both the governor's position and the Senate's position, and to the extent that the House position is the governor's, they rely on an assumed approval of a waiver to extend the current Minnesota Care program for calendar year 2014, and that beginning in calendar year 2015, the basic health plan funding that is included in the Affordable Care Act would be available to the state. There's no waiver requirement at that point.
Okay.
Yeah, Mr. Chair.
As far as the timelines, Mr. Chair, I don't know if this is going to add clarity, but it does get pretty convoluted because there's actually three distinct time periods with different federal funding streams within the upcoming biennium. In the first 6 months of the upcoming biennium, leading up to calendar 2014, so the last half of calendar 2013, we're still under the existing 1115 waiver, which is a 50% federal match. For all of calendar year 2014, the next 12 months, we're assuming a renewal of the 1115 waiver, which is essentially another 50% match scenario, but with the elimination of the hospital cap and some of the other required eligibility changes, so it changes the fiscal effects a little bit. And then the third period is beginning on January 1st of 2015, when the basic health plan financing mechanism for Minnesota Care actually starts to flow. And those assumptions are in there. And you can actually see that and the effect of that rolling out as you go into the tails. And we have, you know, Minnesota really did a fantastic job of getting the feds to move on implementing the basic health plan for us. And as you look out, you know, all of our proposals save over $300 million of current projections to cover 154,000 people by the end of fiscal 17. So, again, I don't know how much additional clarity that brought for anybody who tracked, right. But there are three separate funding streams within the upcoming biennium that we're trying to track on this program implementation.
Well, that was the answer to my question. Thank you, Senator.
Mr. Chair.
Representative Liebling.
Yeah, thank you, Mr. Chair. Thank you for that, Senator Lurie. And I just wanted to add that obviously this is a hugely important topic within the bill, and what you said before, Senator Lurie, about how important it is. Absolutely, I think both sides agree on that. But as we look at the spreadsheet here, there's just there are a lot of complications. Even besides what you just explained, there are differences between the three proposals. And I just wanted to make a pitch here for that we spend some time, not now, but really going more deeply into this with the help from staff giving us whatever additional information, but just even within this proposal, I'd like to better understand what the differences are. So just wanted to kind of put that out there for a future meeting.
Thank you. Back to Albright or Ferg?
Mr. Chair, continuing on page 12, line 793, this item is administrative and systems costs for the various health coverage expansions. The House numbers are the way the governor's budget was originally described. Since then, Mr. Albright will have to help me on this. I believe the governor has changed the way they describe some of theirs. So some of the money that the House is showing up in the Minnesota Care Reform item in the governor's has actually moved down to the systems line. And my understanding then is that the Senate does really the same items but carries them in a totally different way and has again gotten rid of some of the FTEs.
Mr. Chair and members, the item, excuse me, on line 793, the governor's recommendation of $4.6 million includes $2.3 million that is attributable to implementing the Minnesota Care Reform provisions. So at one point, the Senate had separated that portion out, and you can see that it is included above in the House position on lines 789-90, it looks like, where on the Senate side you can see that those are zero because we just got to a point where the target made it difficult to continue carrying those items on the Senate's side. And so in consultations with Mr. Berg, we decided to carry the Minnesota Care costs with the Minnesota Care item. The governor does not want to present his budget that way. And so that explains the difference between the House provision of $2.3 million and the governor's of $4.6 million on line 793. So now the House position is carrying its Minnesota Care costs with its Minnesota Care item and the amount attributable to the other health care coverage expansions that the House is willing to pay for is on line 793.
Mr. Chair, moving on to line 801, this is a House-only provision that adds 1% to the base of the agency in each year of the biennium in each of their various funds. Moving on to page 13, line 826, this is the Affordable Care Act appeals item the governor had. The House actually cut the FTEs in this item to 4, and in this area the Senate did not cut FTEs. They have the governor's full complement. Moving on to line 831 is the governor's item to permit mental health care treatment in foster care. Both the House and Senate picked up that item and it has projected savings.
Mr. Chair, line 835 is a Senate-only provision that provides mental health first aid training. On line 839 is the governor's recommendation to provide MA coverage for electronic tablets as augmentative communication devices. Saves money because they are less expensive than the devices that are currently provided to people. Line 843 is the governor's provision that reallocates money within a dedicated fund to continue operations at the Security Hospital's Wilmer site. It's about $5.4 million total. the net impact is neutral because it is a reallocation. On line 848 is the governor's recommendation to recognize savings in the child care programs attributable to all-day kindergarten. The Senate's savings are higher than the governor's because the Senate's education bill had more all-day kindergarten than the governor's recommendation.
Mr. Chair, I should say it's my understanding that the House K-12 bill also has a more robust all-day kindergarten item, and this is an item where as the conference goes on, we're going to have to track what happens in K-12 to get an accurate picture of what our savings might be for this item.
Mr. Chair, on line 852 is the governor's recommendation for the Family Assets for Independence in Minnesota program, the FAME program. All three positions are $500,000 of ongoing funding. On line 880 is the governor's proposal for homelessness prevention. It's funding of $5 million with some FTEs. Similar provisions are in the House and Senate on line 866. The House has $3 million of ongoing funding, and the Senate has $4 million of ongoing funding.
Mr. Chair, starting on line 870, I should note, actually, with the item that Mr. Albrecht just mentioned on 866 and continuing for the next six items.
Mr. Berg?
Yeah.
Just to go back a little bit to line 856, I skipped over that item. It is a Senate position only that relates to closing unenforceable child support orders. The Senate does have that policy provision.
Mr. Chair, that also passed in the House. For some clarity, as a standalone bill. I'm just saying that the unenforceable child support also passed in the House as a standalone bill.
Representative Abler.
No. Okay. Cheering for it.
Passed on the floor. Passed on the floor.
To track it. Yes. Okay.
Yes.
Yes.
All right. Mr. Chairman, the House items from lines 856, the Homeless Youth Act, 870, the Long-Term Homeless Supportive Services, 874, the Transitional Housing Programs, 878, Emergency Grants for Homeless Individuals, 882, the Homeless Outreach Grants, and 886, this portion of the Safe Harbor for Sexually Exploited Youth program. Those items are not in the House language. They are in Representative Clark's housing finance bill. But since they're all human services items, those items will end up being conferred in this bill. But the language and the money is not actually in the language of the House bill. Senate also has, I guess I'll move on to 886. The Senate also has this portion of the Safe Harbor for Sexually Exploited Youth. I'll come to another item that the House has at the Health Department that's also Safe Harbor provisions. I believe in the House that these items are housing items, and then we have others coming. On line 890, is the governor's item to repeal the last 6 months of the 1.67% cut on long-term care provider rates. Both the House and the Senate picked up that item. And I will let Mr. Albright explain the transfers of MinCare items.
Mr. Chair and members, on line 898 is a Senate position that transfers money from the Health Care Access Fund to the General Fund. It's a $270 million transfer, and that amount represents the amount attributable to the first two provisions we discussed on this spreadsheet, the ACA compliance and the ACA MOE provisions.
Mr. Chair, Bird. Line 904, the House takes a different approach in the tails and actually transfers the cost of MA spending in the general fund for MA populations to the healthcare access fund. So there's competing ways of approaching this going on.
And, Mr. Chair, on line 910, the Senate has a transfer, again, from the healthcare access fund to the general fund. This transfer is to basically cover the spending and the balance of the Senate's position.
And on line 916, the last item at the Department of Human Services, the governor transferred $65 million to the healthcare access fund in 2014 for cash flow purposes. The House does that and also transfers it back to the general fund in 2015. Mr. Chair, moving on to the Department of Health, the governor's package for general fund increases to increase core public health activities at the Department of Health is $2 million in the 14-15 biennium. Both the House and Senate picked up that same item.
Mr. Chair, on line 1241 is a Senate position that includes $1.5 million of ongoing funding for the Text for Life program. On line 1245 is also a Senate position for the Minnesota Poison Information Center. It's $500,000 of ongoing funding.
Mr. Chair, on line 1249, the House has $2 million and $1 million a year ongoing from the Healthcare Access Fund for transfer to the Merck program. And then moving on to the title being on line 1253 on line 14, but the fiscal impact on the top of line, page 15, the House has a provision for licensing facilities which provide abortion services. On line 1258, the House only carries, again, a 1% in each year of the biennium increase to the base of the agency in each of their funds. And on line 1272 is where the safe harbor for sexually exploited youth provisions that are in the House Human Services bill are.
Mr. Chair, on line 1276 is a Senate position relating to maternal depression and reduction in preparation of plans and reports by the Department of Health.
Line 1280, Mr. Chair, is the nurse staffing study bill. The House has that at the Health Department.
Let's check it in there.
You see the general fund expenditure of $252,000. I believe that bill is traveling separately in the Senate.
That's correct.
Mr. Chair, on line 1284 is governor's item on healthcare facility blueprint review. Both sides picked up, which saves $780,000 biennium. On line 1288 is the SHIP program. The governor funded that at $40 million in the first biennium. The House has funded it at $45 million, and the Senate has funded it at $15 million. In each case, those are ongoing funds. On line 1293 is the department's initiative on home care licensing reform. You'll see the numbers that the House and Senate have are different than the governor's. This reflects the departments work with the providers to adjust the rate schedule to one that's, agreed upon by all parties. On line 1298 is the department's item in the special revenue fund on geothermal heat systems. have that. On line 1303 is the newborn screening initiative. Both the House and Senate also have that. And then on line 1310, there's an additional item which related to that that both the House and Senate have that includes a fee increase for deaf and hard of hearing screening and support for deaf and hard of hearing individuals. On line 1318 is, again, a special revenue fund is a governor's change item that both sides have for lab testing fees. And, Mr. Chair, the items on page 16 from line 1226 to 1360 are items at the Department of Health which are not within the jurisdiction of this committee, so members can skip over those. The Senate lines, the House and the governor have the same. The Senate zeroed the lines out. There isn't any implication of anything different going on there. The Senate just zeroed out the lines that didn't have anything to do with this committee's subsequent spreadsheet. We'll make that the same. We'll just get rid of those lines. On line 1361 is the Department of Health's item to save $200,000 a year on rent for a facility they no longer use. On line 1365 is an item that the governor had that both sides picked up on modifying the environmental lab assessment program. And on line 1370, the last item at the Department of Health is a governor's item that both houses have to modify the mortuary science regulations. Moving on to the other general fund agencies, the Ombudsman for Families, the governor had an item to reinstate a office manager position. Both houses picked that item up. The House also has a 1% base increase for the agency as it has for other agencies. When you on line 1382 on the EMS board, the House carries just the 1% base increase. The Senate has no comparable item. On line 1387, the House has a base increase for the Ombudsman for Mental Health. The Senate has no comparable item. And on the top of page 17 at the Disability Council, line 1391, there was a governor's recommendation for an emergency preparedness training item. Both houses pick up that item, plus the House also has the 1% base increase. And then I guess I will go the health-related boards. The House has put in a 1% base increase for all the health-related boards in each year of the biennium, and then also picks up the at the Board of Nursing Home Administrators the item related to background checks for licensed health professionals.
Mr. Chair,
Representative Abler.
Yeah, for the health boards, it's nice that they were given a COLA. But they had some other specific requests, and I know that it just didn't get heard in the House. I think we got busy doing other things, and I think there's three or four boards that I think have non-controversial things they want. I don't know if the Senate heard them or not, but it'd be nice if we could take some time and listen to what they need. They're pretty frugal, and one group had too much. They said, no, we're not giving you all that, so they went back and reworked it to be a bit more sensible. So maybe that could be taken up. And then also the EMSRB had some needs that were general fund. The nice thing about the health boards is it's special revenue, and so we don't have to, it comes out of their licensees as a cost basis, but EMSRB is cash. So maybe if there's time, we could look into those and see if the committee can agree to that.
Thank you.
Mr. Chair.
Senator Lurie.
To Representative Abler's point, yeah, the Senate, just had trouble finding the time to go through the entirety of the licensing board's requests as well. It's not an omission that we're solid on. We can probably give some time to review those and add some things to this. It would be my take on that as well. So, I think maybe prior to getting our joint target, that's an area that we might be able to work on.
Mr. Chair, couple of items with respect to the boards that are different on the Senate side is one of them is on line 1414 in the Board of Marriage and Family Therapy. The Senate includes a reduction in fees on line 1418, resulting in a $20,000 revenue loss. Within the Board of Nursing Home Administrators, there is on line 1435 a position in the Senate that requires the boards to post on their websites information relating to maternal depression that carries a cost of $7,000 each year.
Didn't have a chair.
Also, within the Board of Pharmacy, the Senate did pick up one of their requests that Representative Abler was referring to out of that bill, and I'm honestly not sure what the provision relates to.
It relates to the compounding facilities, that compound drugs. It's based on the very serious problem that came out of a compounding facility in Massachusetts and killed a number of people in Minnesota.
I can't be good.
And so, too, it's SGSR, but it increases the oversight of compounding facilities. And I like the Senate position.
Mr. Chair and Mr. Berg, I believe with respect to the remaining items on the House position, they are all just base adjustments similar to the rest of the items for the health-related boards, and so that would end the overview of that spreadsheet. If you would like to continue, there's a, I believe the members is just one page and it's two-sided of the contingent Reform 2020 items.
we're on the floor, but we can skip it. We're going into caucus.
Mr. Chair and
is this it? Mr. Albrecht.
Mr. Chair and members, the this spreadsheet is similar in its presentation to the others. I think the thing that is most important to note about this spreadsheet is that on line 6, the total impact for the 14-15 biennium is zero. So that if these provisions were to become enacted, they would have no impact on the committee's target. And depending on when they're implemented, they would result in TAILS savings. The first item is on line 86. These are all Governor's Reform 2020 proposals. This one, titled Enhance Vulnerable Adult Protection, creates a statewide toll-free number to report suspected abuse, neglect, and exploitation of vulnerable adults. The Governor's recommendation is about $8.5 million. The Senate's position funds everything except the FTEs. That's the difference in the dollar there.
Mr. Chair.
Representative Abler.
I just listening here mostly, but that's the third time I've heard the Senate say that they're just not paying for FTEs, but they're buying all this stuff. How does that work? Is there a I mean, how do you do things without having the FTEs to do them? I'm not being facetious, but how do you – and I appreciate that you're trying to save some money, but is it the Senate's opinion after looking at the staff that they don't need those people, or are you just saying manage within your allocation some way or other?
Senator Lurie.
Mr. Chair, Representative Abler, we spent a lot of time going through the governor's budget, and, there's a lot of really good proposals in there that we thought were – quite meaningful, but sometimes we weren't entirely clear how every one of these FTEs would be used towards the policy goals that were in there. And so we took an approach where we didn't just fund them. We had the luxury of going third. We saw the governor's budget, we saw the House's budget, and we thought that, you know, in order to foster a decent conversation, to ask some of these questions, we would not fund every one of these FTEs. We funded something just a little under half of the full FTE request that came out of the administration. And so, you know, our general approach is to allow the department the ability to come forward and help us understand better exactly how these FTEs will be used to further the policy goals expressed in the proposals that came out of the governor's office. So, I mean, it's not intended to be a difficult conversation, but we'd like to be able to have that conversation and get some good answers and make sure that we understand exactly what we're investing in when we add FTEs.
Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Yeah. Representative Liebling.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And I just wanted to add to that there's been quite a bit of debate in the House on other bills about FTEs that have been added. And so, you know, even though we didn't take that approach in our bill, I appreciate the fact that we're going to have that conversation, and I would expect that Representative Abler will be very supportive of that, since it tends to be the minority in the House that's been all over that issue. And, Mr. Chair, I just also wanted to say I expect we'll be wrapping up here soon, but I know DFL House members need to be. We have an important visitor in our caucus, and we should probably move on to that if we can, or I'd like to anyway.
So are we done here?
Mr. Chair.
And I won't
belabor this, but I have a handout I want to pass out too, so I'll just announce that in this chat here. But and thanks, Representative Liebling, for that observation. I was going to say that if I would have got to speak before you. But that'll make some of my members happy that you're looking at this, because I value state employees. You just want to hire the right number. But, Mr. Chair, I have a handout from the department that evaluates both House and Senate bills about total fund growth. I think it'll be useful for members at this overview time, and so maybe a page could pass those out. And they're very interesting, and they're just from the department. So thank you.
Let's wait and see what it looks like.
Can there be extra copies?
Mr. Chair and Representative Abler and members of the committee, I just wanted to clarify Senator Lurie's comment that the Senate position includes about half of the governor's request for FTEs. That's not all, because we didn't fund them. Some of them are just entire proposals that are not included on the Senate side. And with respect to the House caucus needing to move on, I can get through the remainder of this relatively quickly, and then we can be done with this part. On line 95, this is basically the FFP that would come with once the waiver is approved. On line 102, this is the item that was already talked about on the Senate side with respect to folks on ventilators. On line 107 is the first contact proposal of the governor's. This is a series of initiatives to provide information to people and their families to help them understand their options for long-term care services, promote access to services in a way that keeps people in their own homes longer, thus avoiding more expensive public programs. It includes enhanced assessments and a report card to provide information to consumers. Again, the Senate does not fund the FTEs. On line 124 is the critical access study and service development proposal. This is a series of initiatives to support planning and development for future long-term care needs at a statewide level. It includes a critical access study to determine where there is need. It includes a gaps analysis. It includes capacity development of providers, among other things. On line 133 is the ICLS. This is the provision that was also discussed in the regular item on the Senate side. Turning the page, similarly on line 143, that crisis diversion item was discussed on the Senate side. Line 149 is the Community First Services and Supports. This is the governor's proposal to replace or reform the current PCA program. It's intended to be more flexible and responsive to facilitate transitions out of institutional care and prevent or delay needed access to higher cost levels of care in institutional settings. It does retain eligibility for existing PCA recipients. On line, the Senate does not fund the FTEs for that proposal. On line 166 is the empower and encourage independence. This would provide employed people with support services to promote stability and mitigate the development of situations that lead to access to more intensive, higher-cost services. Senate does not fund the FTEs nor the evaluation contract. It does not seem to be a required element of the proposal. On line 175 is the housing stability and services demonstration. This seeks federal approval of a waiver that would allow FFP on current state spending in the GRH program for the general assistance population. The additional money would be used to develop coordinated service strategies that promote housing stability. The Senate does not fund the FTEs. And on line 183 is the balance of the governor's proposal with respect to the DHS technology systems. This is the portion that of spending that is called contingent in order to make the impact of this whole series of proposals neutral in the 2014-15 biennium.
Any questions? I don't see any, so that we're going to finish up then and move on. And Senator Lori, what time are we coming back tomorrow?
8 a.m., 8:30 or 8? Staff tells me 8 a.m. I thought it was 8:30, but we're going to come back at 8 a.m. tomorrow morning. I'd like to work through some of the side-by-sides. Till 10 a.m., and then the intent would be to recess and come back tomorrow evening and start working on some things. Actually, I'd like to work through the licensing boards. So we'll have some handouts of their requests and maybe take some, try to make it brief, some testimony, get through that. These are some things that we don't need our target in order to accomplish. We can start to absorb the side-by-sides and maybe hear from the licensing boards and hopefully even close that piece up. Senator Sharon.
Thank you.
Senator Sharon.
thank you, Representative Huntley. Have you discussed together or can you give a general sense of the next 4, 5, 6 days in terms of what your plan is for us as a conference committee to be meeting?
I think, Senator Sharon, that we'll be meeting every morning and every evening. We have a very short timeline, at least in the House side, to get this done in about a week and a half, and which is the shortest time I've ever seen for this particular committee to get a omnibus bill done. So we're going to have to spend a lot of hours.
Friday night?
Friday, I think we'll be, my proposal would be we come here Saturday, not Sunday, and get it done by next Friday if we can. But that's my position. That's you have your own position.
Yeah, I'm going to be leaving either Friday or Saturday night. My son has his last play of his high school career, and I'm going to be up there at 7:30 on either Friday or Saturday. I'm open to which one, but I'm going to go see one of the two performances. Representative Huntley and I will get together and try to provide some more clarity.
I'd appreciate that.
We'll get some notices out as soon as
we have similar things we'd like to think about. So,
Mr. Chair,
thank you very much.
Mr. Chair,
Commissioner Justin's son has graduated from college, I think, in the second week of May. So,
and Mr. Chair,
there are more important things than what we're doing actually for some families. Representative Abler.
Mr. Just a weather update for tomorrow. They're predicting snow tonight. And so that might be interesting for your 8 o'clock start time. There may be a spotty attendance. But
we're in Minnesota.
Don't go home. Just stay.
Oh, I start earlier. You might as well. Whatever, just so you know.
Maybe stuck in your brain.
That's what Mike Lynch says anyway. A narrow band of snow.
Okay, with that, the conference committee is adjourned.